This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Welcome back. We've been talking about how the how a predatory industry, essentially, what has become a predatory industry, the pharmaceutical industry, that was largely regulated during most of my lifetime and probably some of yours, depending on how old you are. This in the rush to deregulation back during the Reagan era, and then particularly in the late 90s, we saw the drug companies basically turn into predators and turn on us. Ted Lieu just tweeted that he has proposed a way to stop. I was talking about Billy Towson in the last hour, the guy who shepherded Medicare Part D through Congress and got a special dispensation from, as I recall, Denny Hastert to leave the House of Representatives and go to work at $2 million a year as the head of Pharma, the pharmaceutical lobbying firm, after he supervised legislation that's made it illegal for anybody in the federal government to try to negotiate discount prices with drug companies. Medicare must pay the full price. It's a $600 billion a decade subsidy to the pharmaceutical industry. We've got people becoming billionaires as a result of the pharmaceutical industry. An industry that you know, should be accountable at some level to all of us. As Ted Lieu says, I just introduced the E. Scott Pruitt Accountability for Government Officials Act because it's important to memorialize his legacy of corruption and that of Trump cabinet officials. It's also a pretty good anti-corruption bill. Good on you. But the corruption in the Trump administration is now being married with the vicious, racially based hatred being sold by the Trump administration and being purchased by young white people all across the country who are doing the OK sign, the white power sign, along with Roger Stone, right here in Portland just a couple days ago, as a way of just kind of broadcasting it after this, after that young woman, Miss Bash, was doing so behind Brett Kavanaugh. I mean, she was with him, and she was doing the white power symbol 2 days in a row. This policy of tearing brown children away from their parents. This is not happening to the occasional European family who shows up without the proper visa or somebody does something out of line while they're here with their kids. No, we don't do this with white people. We're doing this with Hispanics. We're doing this with, quote, brown people. 100%. And Trump is slow walking this and trying to keep the roughly 500 children, one of them in Chicago more than a year now, a five-year-old for more than a year, he's been separated from his family. Can you imagine the damage, the trauma? Large numbers of these kids now are on psychotropic drugs to deal with the trauma and the pain of being ripped away from their parents and put in prisons. And a number of them have started harming themselves, and a couple have tried to commit suicide. One actually died. And Trump, instead of reuniting these children, is saying, let's take $100 million out of a bunch of federal agencies, $10 million of it out of FEMA, just in time for the hurricane. We're going to take $10 million out of FEMA, and we're going to pass that money over to the for-profit corporations that give money to the Republican Party and build private prisons. Isn't that great? We have kids who have attempted suicide. We have kids who have told judges when brought in for hearings that they want to die. We have multiple shelters now that have been accused of having employees sexually abusing these children. You have a judge who ordered the federal government to stop giving psychoactive drugs to these children without parental consent. But hey, you got 500 kids where the federal government is saying their parents have given them up. They signed a paper in English, and they didn't read English. They didn't understand what the paper said, but hey, they signed the paper. We've got their kids. And we're going to put them in foster homes or something, or we'll put them in jail. It's more profitable. It's only $800-$900 a day that we're paying these private prison companies to quote care for our children. Are these not our children? Are we not part of the world? Are we not part of the human race? Well, Stephen Miller would tell you that we're not. Donald Trump would tell you that we're not. And I think that that reveals the fundamental evil, the fundamental sickness, the fundamental rot at the core of these men's souls, and certainly at the core of their policies. I mean, I remember when Adam Walsh was kidnapped and murdered. One white kid. And today, parents of 10-year-olds are being put in jail for letting their kids go to the public park and play alone. And you know I'm not making this up. The entire country became hysterical when Adam Walsh was abducted. Oh my God, a little white kid abducted, raped, murdered. We can't let our kids go outside. The entire country went on alert. This is such a terrible thing. And then we discovered he wasn't the only one. There were other kids out there the same thing happened to. But, you know, the odds of your kid being kidnapped, raped, murdered are less than of your kid being struck by a meteorite or lightning. But still, we went nuts. That's how much we care in this country. Right? When a real story, when an actual child's actual story and their grieving parents can get on network news night after night, like Adam Walsh did, and he eventually got his own TV program out of it. I forget, who was the son and who was the father? I want to say Adam Walsh. Adam was the kid. Who was the dad?
John
Walsh. That's right. Thank you, Sean. So, you know, John Walsh got his TV program. What this tells us is that as a nation, we're not completely without heart. I mean, in fact, I think, you know, we've gone way too far in the whole, you know, helicopter parenting thing, but that's a whole nother conversation. But as a country, we do have a heart. We do have compassion. And a lot of people are looking at what the Trump administration did with these children and is continuing to do with these children, while the acolytes of Stephen Miller and the other people in the White House and the woman who worked with Stephen Miller, who sat behind Judge Kavanaugh, Ms. Bash, and did the white power sign, and then, you know, Roger Stone coming to Portland and doing the white power sign with the Proud Boys and tweeting it all over the internet. This kind of stuff tells us that there what is breaking down here, in my opinion, is basically good versus evil. And on the evil side, you've got Trump and Moore and Bash and Stone and the Proud Boys and all these other racists. And on the good side, you've got people who are going, wait a minute, you're taking children away from their parents? Children didn't commit a crime. The parents didn't actually commit a crime that's worthy of going to jail for. Historically, we have not put people in prison for these violations. They're, at law, the same kind of violation as jaywalking. We don't put people in prison for jaywalking either. But even if we did, we have ways to keep families together. That's historically what we've done. But no, Trump wants to, well, John Kelly came out and said, you know, we're going to punish them hard so that other people will not come to this country. It's going to be a warning to them, right? This is, you know, John Kelly obviously believes in the strong father model of parenting, the strong father model of governance that is at the core of conservative worldview. Somebody needs to be in charge, and it should be a man, and he should be tough. And if your little four-year-old starts crying, just whack them upside the head and stick them in jail. And give them some drugs if they won't shut up. And that's exactly what we're doing. This is just so breathtakingly wrong. Diverting $10 million from FEMA to pay private, mercenary, blood-on-their-hands corporations to build prisons to hold children. And now the Trump administration is saying, You know that law that was passed that said that the government can't hold a child in solitary confinement in prison for more than 21 days? We're going to blow that up. And we're going to say that these for-profit companies can hold these children forever, or at least until they're 18, and then we can deport them. And we got companies that'll make a profit on deporting them too. This is the world that Trump and Miller and Bash and Stone and these other people have brought us. And frankly, I think America is waking up, and I think a backlash is developing, and I think it's a good and strong thing. And in about a half hour from now, we're going to have Jeff Merkley. Senator Jeff Merkley is going to drop by, and we're going to talk about just this. In the meantime, I'll be picking up your phone calls. We've got a few other things in the news as well, so stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's 17 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. And welcome back, Susan in Brunswick, Georgia. Hey, Susan, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, here's an important point that I wanted to make, and this is why pharmaceuticals should be at a lower price and regulated by the government, is because all those pharmaceutical companies, all of the medicines that they come up with, it is all funded by our taxpayer money.
Yeah, it's not all, but it's the majority of it. It's well over half.
Correct. The majority of it is. Then they turn around, they patent it, and they sell it to us at prices that we can't afford. That's why it should be regulated by the government. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Susan. Well said. Linda in Matlock, Washington. Hey, Linda. Thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Hi. I'm a registered nurse and have been for about 30 years. Mm-hmm. And the pharmaceutical industry, they really shifted their business model from going to doctors and doing lunch and learns to now they're doing a lot on the television.
Right.
And to the lady's point before, we spend about $30 billion in research and development. One of the drugs that came to market is called Harvoni. It is a hep C cure, actually, about 97% cure rate.
Yeah, I have friends who've used it.
Yeah.
It works.
And the scientists that developed that, he actually sold his interest off in that drug, and his explanation was, yes, I was a government scientist at NIH that helped develop this, but there was a percentage of me that was like a business person, and he got like something like $400 million. This drug sells retail at $1,000 a tablet, and it's about a 12-week course. And with all the diagnostic studies that you need before, after, and all the follow-up, it's about $100,000 per treatment per patient. And so, yeah, we spend a lot. And Narcan, the intranasal Narcan, it's a DARPA-developed delivery system where you just have to basically just shoot it up their nose. It comes in a two-pack. Mm-hmm. These meds are very, very cheap because they are generic, naloxone. And this, they wanted to charge our facility for a two-pack, which they come like the EpiPen in two-packs, because in case you have a failure on the first administration, $124.
Wow. So for what's probably 25 cents worth of pharmaceutical.
Exactly. And, of course, DARPA, the military, they were the ones that manufactured this delivery system because you needed battlefield medicine that could be administered very quickly by someone with minimal medical training.
Wow.
So, yeah, it is, and also with the opiates, the Purdue Pharma company that gave us Oxy has now gotten a hold of a patent for the Suboxone, which is buprenorphine, which is the addiction drug,
right.
And they're holding that patent off in the UK. So they are going to make money on the addiction, they're going to make money on the reversing of overdoses, and they will make money on the treatment.
Yep. And my understanding is they basically change one molecule on that, or one atom on that molecule.
Exactly.
And thus it became a, quote, new drug. And everybody's scamming the system. Linda, we just have 20 seconds, but I don't remember this happening in the 60s and 70s, and even frankly in the 80s.
Nope.
It seems like it all came post-Reagan. Do you know what the turning point was when the drug companies were deregulated like this? Was it at the state by state or federal or what?
I think it kind of went kind of, I think it seemed like it was over the whole country. It just seemed like they all bought into that.
Yeah.
I would like to make one statement.
Very
quick.
Making
money from pain and suffering is immoral.
Yes. Very well said. That is just like making money from war. You know, Franklin Roosevelt said that we will have no new war millionaires from this current unpleasantness, World War II. This is just profiteering and price gouging. Linda, thank you. Welcome back. Kano in Lakeland, Florida. Hey, Kano, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom. Remember, I'm Kano from Lakeland for the Moose Herders.
Oh, yeah.
And we want to talk about our agenda. Now, we want the public to understand what we're trying to do. We want John Huntsman to be put in as vice president so he can negotiate a rules of engagement for cyber war with Russia. He's got contacts in Russia. And we need to tell Russia to quit hacking into our system here. So we want John Huntsman to be the vice president to negotiate a rules of engagement. Now, if I could send a message, all the senators, all the Republican senators in the Senate who will join in with the Moose Herders, we're going to call them the Lions, and there'll be a pride of lions. And we're going to start with Susan Collins. And we plead with her, we beg with her to vote against Kavanaugh. We don't want corporate fascism in America, you know.
Kano, let me interrupt you just for a minute. Kano, let me interrupt you just for a minute. People who are listening may not realize who you are. You are, I think, probably the only Republican in America, well, you know, one of, actually, no, there's more and more of them coming out, who still has loyalty to the Republican Party and yet thinks Donald Trump is crazy and a danger to the Republic.
Yes, absolutely. Now, remember, Tom, our motto is convince Pence to dump Trump.
Okay. Well, I don't think Pence will take much convincing on that. He has believed since he was 13 years old that God wants him to be president of the United States.
Well, all right, now here's the thing. Also, Maxine Waters was on Newsmax on Jesse Lee Peterson's program, and he showed her saying, after we get Trump, we're going to get Pence. And I asked Maxine to please back off. Don't be premature. We may get Pence later if he doesn't act right, but right now we're going to need to use him to change teams and have him and Huntsman to be the team. Right now it's just Trump and Pence as a team. We got to get the old nag, but to mix our metaphors, the U.S. Republican senators who would join in with us to get the old elephant and pull him down. And we want to start with Susan Collins. She'll be the lioness. She can be part of the pride. We're going to help America.
If she doesn't cave on Kavanaugh, yeah, I'm with you. Kino, thank you for the call. It's always interesting hearing from you. Fascinating, actually. Hobart in Pearlington, Mississippi. Hey, Hobart, what's up?
Hi, Tom. A couple weeks ago, I read James Hansen's book, Storms of My Grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting to end up dismissing it, but it actually surprised me because it has most of the facts I'm aware of in it. It's an excellent book.
I have not read the book. It should be on my list, and I should have read it. Tell me what you learned.
While I'm still nowhere near as alarmist as James Hansen about climate change, the interesting thing is I totally agree with his recommendations. Phasing out coal completely, but not instantly, because you're not going to get any voters by turning people's electricity off. That's a big loser. But...
But you can get a lot of voters by offering them cheap, low-cost, clean electricity.
Yeah.
I mean, the Germans love their 100,000 rooftop program, which has turned into tens of millions of rooftops, where the government worked with the banks and with the solar industry to provide basically, free solar power. Of course, the utility is not a for-profit utility in Germany, I believe. I believe it's state-run. And so, it was just what's best for society. But
there's plenty of good reason to phase out coal anyway, because of the mercury and arsenic, cadmium and sulfur and all the other pollutants.
As I recall, James Hansen is a fan of nuclear power, and I have a problem with that. And I think you do too. You are also a fan of nuclear power, as I recall, Hobart.
I'm ambivalent about it, but nuclear is one of those things you have to do right. That's
And I'm not seeing that. In fact, there's a half a dozen nuclear power plants in the way of this Hurricane Florence that's coming toward North Carolina.
Yeah. Admiral Rickover made the Navy do it right. I think he ruffled quite a few feathers doing it. But
But, you know, let's keep in mind, Fukushima came about as a result of, well, it was an earthquake, but it wasn't an earthquake that damaged the plant. It was water. It was water that drowned out the generators that were keeping the plant going during, you know, when the power lines went down. And if something like that happens in North Carolina, we could have a whole world of hurt. Hobart, thanks for the call. Always good to hear from you. It's 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We'll be right back with more of your calls after this. Stick around. It's Viagra for your brain, the Tom Hartman Program. Just don't tell Limbaugh, he'll want some. Larry in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to talk about what the nurse just said about Zabaquin and all these drugs. For the last 11 years, the VA has prescribed over 30,000 pain pills for me. And last January, last January, after coming out of the hospital with a stint, they came to me and said, "We're taking your pain pills away." So I've had to learn words like Zabaquin and Zebutex and Kratom. And all this 9 months, I have begged and pleaded telling these doctors that I'm having withdrawals. And they would do nothing to help me. My blood pressure's gone crazy. So what this lady has said is that because they've taken away all of the opiates from our veterans and only will prescribe 5 days at a time, they've substituted with a drug called gabapentin. This drug is not approved for anything but seizures, and it will cause suicides. I'm a disabled vet for major depression with PTSD, and all they're trying to do is kill me, and I finally got a doctor to tell me the other day there was something they could do different, and they switched me to pure morphine, and I'm tapering on that, and the withdrawals have gone away, and the blood pressure has come back to normal. Yeah. So basically, they've thrown away the morphine and the Percocets, and they're taking on gabapentin and any other drugs, Zeputex and Zabaquin and all these weird names,
yeah,
and they're still going to kill us.
Well, and gabapentin is, it's also, the brand name is Neurontin, and it's,
right.
They're not even sure the mechanism of action. It just seems to down-regulate the entire nervous system. People take it, and it slows down everything from peristalsis to pain, apparently. And the major use for it now, off-label, because the on-label use is for neuropathic nerve pain, the major off-label use is for sleeping. For people who are addicted to sleeping pills, you know, they're hooked on benzos or the Z drugs or whatever, and they're using Neurontin to deal with that. It's a complicated world, Larry. But it's a crime you got addicted to the opiates in the first place, and B, it's a crime that they're not helping you with that addiction. You know, tapering off addictions is a fairly straightforward process that has been known for 200 years. And, you know, it may take months to do it, and you get down to doses that are almost homeopathic toward the end, but it can be done. Lots and lots of people do it. I have friends who have done it. Go ahead.
I tried to tell them that the Percocets that I was taking were not working.
Yeah.
And they would not listen to me. They basically called me a liar for the last 9 months. Until a week and a half ago, this new doctor gave me a different prescription.
Yeah. Well, thank God for him or her.
Larry,
thanks for the call. My heart goes out to you. I mean, it was a long time ago. I knew a lot of people who were addicts. I knew, you know, a number of friends of mine got addicted to heroin, back in the 60s. And it was not a good thing to watch. In fact, one of them died, Bill Call. He was a brilliant musician, and he died from a heroin overdose. We've come a long way, and we've got some good drugs to treat this stuff. But the profit motive in our pharmaceuticals is killing us. Tom, in Cape Canaveral, Florida, you wanted to talk about nuclear reactors in the path of the hurricane. Do I have that right?
Yeah, the Savannah River site, which is what you were talking about, the number of reactors. There's 19 of them at that site.
Wow. Just in one site?
At one site, and in fact, you can look it up on the map, you'll see this big circle, and it's right next to Augusta, Georgia. So if you just look to the right, you can't miss it on Google Maps. But the biggest problem would be the two breeder reactors, because there's things that are, and in fact, you can find it in the Tom Clancy novels, Made Me Fall on the Floor During Clear and Present Danger. But essentially, there's a lot of waste material that has to be kept cool and aggregated. 10,000-gallon tank farms,
right,
of which there's like 40 different tanks.
Right. Well, this is.
And so if you get hit with water, nasty, it's going to turn into steam, and it's just going to contaminate a huge area.
Yeah. It you're adding water to the tanks, to the pools that are already cooling it, so that may not be quite as disastrous. But, you know, just as an example of the stupidity of nuclear power from the get-go, Osama bin Laden, his original plan when he was putting together a plan to attack the United States was to fly an airplane into the nuclear point, the Indian Point nuclear reactor outside of New York City. It would have created a 100-mile radius of basically a dead zone, which would have included all of New York City and the New Jersey suburbs that are you know, associated with New York all the way out to Long Island for, you know, 100,000 years or 10,000 years or whatever. And he pulled the plug on that and changed it to the towers, or Khalid Sheikh Mohammed did when they were planning this, because they believed that there had to be missiles, surface-to-air missiles. There had to be some sort of a defense of that nuclear power plant. And it turns out that there was no defense, and to this day there is no defense. But even worse than that is you don't even need to fly a plane into the dome, which is, you know, concrete and reinforced steel. You could fly a small plane into one of the pools, these pools that you're talking about, and stir up and create a Chernobyl kind of event. It would be a massive, dirty bomb. And well, ever since 9/11, our disaster preparedness people have been having this conversation that I'm telling you about right now. It's no secret. It's right out in the open. And still nothing's being done because the nuclear industry doesn't want to pay for any kind of protection.
We figured out a way to safe it. It's called vitrification. If we
yes.
put it in glass and bury it in the salt mines,
yep.
It would be safe.
Oh, you could even keep it in the...
We're talking about $100 billion, like a moon program.
That's exactly right. It would cost a fortune. And you could vitrify this stuff and leave it in the pools. Leave it in, you know, leave it near the reactors. If, you know, worst case scenario, it would no longer be something that you could blow up with an airplane or, you know, a couple of sticks of dynamite and create, you know, a 100-mile radius dead zone. So spot on, Tom, spot on. There's this whole idea that of nuclear power is just nuts. It's 41 minutes past the hour. Jeff Berkley's going to be with us in a few minutes. Stick around. You know, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. You never know. In all probability. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And we're also taking your phone calls at 202-808-9925. Stick around. And welcome back. Kevin in Tracy, California. Hey, Kevin, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV.
Thank you, Kevin, as always, for taking my call. I wanted to talk that... I'm on hemodialysis and have been for 3 years, and I go to DaVita, and John Oliver had an expose about them a year or so ago, and they're basically in the business of making profit off of terminally ill people, and while I'm very grateful that I have Medicare and Medi-Cal, I just think that that's just not a good thing, and also being poor... on dialysis, it makes it a lot harder to get a transplant because rich people can multi-list and stuff. And I just wanted to just generally bring awareness to people how, you know, awful it is to have kidney failure.
Yeah. And this, again, is something that would not be happening in California or Norway or Germany or France or England or Spain or Sweden or Denmark or, you know, increasingly even countries like Poland and Hungary. It would not be happening because other countries around the world have adopted single-payer healthcare systems, you know, Medicare for all-type healthcare systems, and they don't have these wide disparities and these for-profit hustlers embedded inside their healthcare systems like what you're describing. Kevin, thank you for...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yes. Okay. I just wanted to say one other thing quickly. You're talking about that Nirmal guy, and I just wanted to say he's like the new Nirmal.
Yeah. Yeah, terrible pun, but good point.
Okay,
Kevin, thanks a lot for the call. It's good to hear from you. John in Grafton, Idaho. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a suggestion that if we live in a post-Orwellian world, and I think that if they were to get rid of the space lab, which is a platform for spying on all mankind, if they were to able to get Congress to do away with the space lab entirely, and then have us take care of Earth. This is where we live. We don't live on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I suggest.
I would be a little more narrow bore, a little more finely nuanced on that, John. What I'm guessing is your concern about the militarization of space. And
yeah.
I would love to see an international treaty that bans the militarization of space. But the fact of the matter is that, during the Bush administration, NASA's budget got redirected away from deep space exploration and pure science and toward largely military applications. And then on top of that, they started privatizing the functions. And so now we've got, SpaceX, you've got Elon Musk is going to be providing us with our rockets. If we want to take anybody to any place. And that's just bizarre. I mean, we put men on the moon in fewer than 10 years, by NASA, by having NASA do it, and it worked quite well. And now it's like, oh, let's figure out, A, how we can militarize space, and B, how we can help somebody make a buck off it. And it just seems wrong to me. So, John, in regard to that, I'm with you. I'm not sure about the space station. I think that, to the extent that they can do scientific experiments, and they are, and they're experiments that are not done just to, enhance the power of the military, I'm pretty much in favor of it. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Senator Jeff Merkley on the line with us. Senator, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
And I should add, obviously, the senator representing the great state of Oregon and one of the most solid progressives in the United States Senate. I am such a fan of you and your work, sir. You have led the charge to let us know that the Trump administration is trying to take money out of the FEMA budget and other federal budgets in order to hand that money off, presumably to private for-profit Republican crony corporations who are then using that to build facilities to permanently or indefinitely, I guess is the word they're using, quote, detain, imprison children. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's right. They laid out a report to Congress that they were taking $10 million out of FEMA. The report's from the month of June, so it was during the first month of the hurricane season. It came from accounts like Response and Recovery or the account for Preparedness and Protection, critical accounts for FEMA doing its job preparing for disasters and responding to disasters, and sent that money off to build prisons.
Wow. Wow. What kind of response have you gotten and has your office gotten? And what kind of response are you hearing across the Democratic Party? And frankly, what kind of response are you getting from the Trump administration to your disclosure of this?
Well, let's start there. The Trump administration's standard operating procedure is to attack the messenger. Now, this information, they should have made it public. They're reprogramming funds. Americans have every right to know where their tax dollars are going. But they didn't, so I wouldn't have known about this information if it hadn't come to me through an organization that somehow got hold of it.
Mm-hmm.
It is extensive. It is detailed. It's certainly in a transparent administration that the people should know. And so their response has been to attack me and say this is politics. Well, this isn't politics. This is sharing what the administration is reporting to Congress. Reporting to Congress what it has already done, and it does raise this bigger issue, and that is the president's been on the air saying that the work of FEMA last year, the work in Puerto Rico, was an A-plus effort. And I went to Puerto Rico in May, and I went to the Virgin Islands, and I saw thousands of homes covered in blue tarps. I saw miles of transmission lines unrepaired. I talked to families where entire communities did not yet have power 9 months after the storm. In fact, they didn't end up getting power until a year after the storm. That is not an A-plus effort. So the challenge here is the administration's attitude has been, we were perfect, so how can you improve on perfection? No, there were big problems of the response in Texas and Puerto Rico and Virgin Islands. And so what did you learn? What are you doing differently? How are you utilizing funds better? What help do you need from Congress? That's the attitude that we should hear from this administration, but we're not hearing it.
I had a question. I was thinking about this yesterday as I was walking home from work. I think that probably can only be answered by somebody inside government who had access to things like Labor Department statistics. One of the sales pitches that we're hearing about the economy from the Trump administration is that not only is unemployment low and jobs are coming back, blah, 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 but that the old-fashioned blue-collar jobs, construction jobs, sheetrocking, roofing, electrical wiring, plumbing, these jobs are coming back so fast that there's not enough trained people to meet the demand. Now, obviously, the response to that would be bring back the unions and their apprenticeship programs. But I'm wondering if the reason that these jobs are coming back is because natural disasters are so much more destructive. People's houses are being burned down in California, flooded out in Texas, destroyed by hurricanes and flooding in from New Orleans to Puerto Rico, and that what we're seeing is not the symptom of a good economy. What we're seeing, in at least in that context, in that narrow context of those kind of jobs, what we're seeing is actually the increase in the severity of storms producing its own little micro economy. Do you know if there's any way to find out if my theory is correct?
Well, now that you've raised it, I'm interested in exploring it. I am absolutely confident that there's been a massive demand for construction-related professions in Texas because of the hurricane that hit Houston. And I'm absolutely sure I saw it firsthand in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. So that certainly goes to your theory. I mean, we're also in an economy that I would call it a sugar high economy, and that is unemployment was already at 4%. And the administration said, well, here's an idea. Let's pump up the economy even more by borrowing $1.5 trillion and basically giving it to the richest Americans. Well, we couldn't get the Republicans to work with us to do a solid stimulus bill when unemployment was 14%. And that's when you need to deficit spend to invest in America, not when we're at 4%. And so this is an artificial high. We're running up the debt. It's going to come back to haunt us. We should have these funds available when the economy isn't the strong economy that Obama built.
Yeah, absolutely agree. In fact, I made that point on Fox News on Sunday, which got some bugged out eyes. Senator, we're talking with Senator Jeff Merkley. Good on you for raising these issues and being such a progressive champion. Anything else that you want to share with us before we wrap this up?
Well, the other side of this formulation, which is the money is going to build prison camps, should concern all Americans. This is the outflow from the child separation policy of treat those fleeing persecution, rip away as criminals, treat them as criminals, rip away their children, rip their children out of their arms. They did this to some 2,650 children. 400 have still not been reunited with their parents. And now the administration, that they have been forced to stop that egregious policy, is saying, let's build family internment camps. The president requested this in an executive order he sent to Congress. There is a Republican bill in the Senate that has 35 Republican senators on that says, yes, we will authorize and build internment camps. And now the president says that he has a draft regulation, I guess it's several hundred pages long, to do it without action by Congress to establish internment camps. We made this mistake in World War II of locking up families. Children do not belong behind barbed wire. There was a perfectly good program called the Family Case Management Program that said, hey, if there is a family fleeing persecution and seeking asylum, we will have a very high level of contact with them until their asylum hearing comes. And the Inspector General for Homeland Security found that 100% of those families show up to their asylum hearing. So it is a complete lie for the administration to talk about families being released and never showing up. And this administration tore down that program. They threw things into chaos. They mistreated children, not egregiously, a horrific infliction of trauma by ripping them away from their parents. Now they want to pursue another form of trauma. We have to stand up and say, no way is this going to happen in the United States of America.
Yeah, this is antithetical to our values.
Exactly.
Fundamentally is. Senator Merkley, thank you so much for dropping by today.
Thank you, Tom.
And thanks for the great work you're doing. I truly appreciate it. Let's pick up some phone calls here. Terry in Florida, in Alachua, Florida. Am I saying that right, Terry?
Alachua.
So what's up?
Okay, I just have a quick question for you, because we've been talking about, listened to you talk a lot about Medicare and the Part D part of Medicare where it was put in, the regulation was put in to forbid Medicare to, negotiate our drug prices.
Right.
So my question is, if we get the right people back in Congress, since they basically put that in there, can they take that back out?
I believe so.
Phew.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so that's another reason to really work to get the Senate and the House.
We need a Democratic supermajority. Absolutely. Spot on.
Yes.
Terry, thank you for the call. Excellent point and an important one. Ben in Chicago, listening to 820 AM. Hey, Ben, thanks for listening to Chicago's Progressive Talk. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir.
You have the last minute of the show here.
Okay, I heard a comment earlier by somebody that called in that the voting machines were hacked by Russia. Did you hear that?
I have read stories that have suggested that that's entirely possible.
How is that possible when voting machines are not on the Internet?
Well, A, there's ways to get access to the voting machines. B, and they're routinely updated, usually by USB drive. B, there are some voting machines that actually are on the Internet. And perhaps most importantly, C, it's not even the voting machines themselves. It's the tabulators, which are part of the voting machine system, that are on the Internet, continuously on the Internet. And those are the system, and that's where you can really easily change vote tallies in ways that leave no fingerprints. They're invisible. And those are the systems that have been easily hacked into at DEFCON. Those are the systems that the University of Pennsylvania has demonstrated are so vulnerable. And they're vulnerable to hackers from North Korea, from Russia, from China. You pick your country. There are hackers who could get into our voting systems. So, yeah, it's not all, flowers and puppies. It's a real problem. Which means that we've got to get out there and get involved, right? Democracy requires it. It's not a spectator sport. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great afternoon.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.